Report?
We don't have a.
Oh, we don't record, okay, I'm sorry, we're. Okay, Senator Foley moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries. Senator Foley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm here before you today to bring out the judiciary omnibus bill which sets forth the funding for the courts, the Board of Public Defense, civil service, and legal services, the Board of Judicial Standards, tax court, and Uniform Law Commission. And this division of mine represents only about 2% of the general fund budget. And we're looking at a situation where our target of $53 million in cuts, which represents 7% of my budget. And one of these things is that we're dealing with a branch of government that is overloaded now with cuts, and these are not conducive to any kind of adequate service by the courts. They're being forced to make cuts where they really can't afford to do that. It forces them to do a series of things that are core functions of government, and they're bound in the Constitution. And so what we're doing here today is something that that we have a court system that's one of the best in the nation, and expect to have that continue to do that. But looking at the problems that face us and the fact that limiting access to the court and the delaying timely handling of court cases, we're certain to have problems in those areas. And one has to only look at how they interact so that the issue is such that if we do something that affects the judges, then it also affects the public defenders in most cases, and perhaps the prosecutor and others. So all of these kinds of things are bad. The cuts in any event, will turn this over to Chris Turner, our division analyst. Chris, would you?
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'll be going through the spreadsheet got in front of you. Real quickly, the spreadsheet has four columns. The first two are the governor's recommendation and the governor's tails. The third column is the chair's recommendations for the coming biennium. And the fourth column is the chairman's recommendation for the 2012 and 13 biennium. The first item is the Supreme Court. It has a base general fund appropriation of $63,584,000. Chair recommends a biennial reduction of $1,296,000 for an appropriation of $62,288,000. Line 9, Civil Legal Services, has a base budget of $24,400,000. Chairman Foley recommends a cut of $496,000 for an appropriation of $23,904,000. Court of Appeals has a base budget of $20,740,000. It's a recommended reduction of $422,000 for an appropriation of $20,318,000. Move down to line 24, the district courts. It has a base budget. They have a base budget of $504,232,000. The chair recommends a total cut to the district courts of $10,530,000. For a general fund, total of $493,702,000. But we have federal stimulus monies that are appropriated to the courts, $5,616,000, and that brings the total appropriation up to $499,318,000. Move to the tax court, a base appropriation of $1,650,000, a $50,000 recommended reduction, and a $1.6 million appropriation. On to page 2, Uniform Laws Commission has a base of $104,000. Chair recommends a cut of $4,000 for a total appropriation of $100,000. Board of Judicial Standards has a base appropriation of $920,000. The chair recommends a cut of $28,000 for a total appropriation of $892,000. And finally, the Board of Public Defense has a base of $136,056,000. Chair recommends a cut of $4,056,000. For a total appropriation of $132 million even. The bill also contains a number of fees, fee increases, and surcharges. I'll go through those very quickly. Starting on line 62, the bill would increase the parking ticket surcharge from $4 to $12. That would raise $6,592,000. Civil court filing fee would be increased from $240 to $265. That would raise $6,372,000. Conciliation court filing fee would be raised from $50 to $60. That would raise $1,016,000. The appellate court filing fee would be raised, or is raised by the bill, from $500 to $550,000. Or from $500 to $550,000, excuse me. And that would raise $102,000. The motion fee for civil, family, and guardianship cases would be raised from $55 to $65.
Thank you.
That increase would bring in $722,000. Then there's a host of court administration fees that are increased approximately 25%. That would bring in $3,019,000. There is a per-page filing and copy fee that would raise $1 per page filing and copy fee, and that would raise $8,354,000. Then there's a Chapter 169, or traffic diversion. People who go through a traffic diversion program would be, presently they don't have to pay the criminal traffic surcharge. This would extend the surcharge to them as well. And that would raise $5,746,000. And then finally, in Article 4 of the bill, the court has a number of improved court collection efforts that they estimate will bring in $3,813,000. And so for a total general fund revenue adjustment of $35,736,000. And so you have a total general fund appropriation of $734,804,000. With the revenue adjustments, it brings us down to our target of $699,068,000. And I'll go very quickly through Article 1 and then turn it over to the rest of the bill over to Ken Backus. Article 1 simply reflects the spreadsheet, so I won't go over the numbers again. There are three riders. None of them are controversial. The first one is on page 2, line 11 to line 15. It's a perennial rider that we put in every other year for the court for a contingent account. $500,000 each year is for an account for expenses necessary for the normal operation of the court. The next rider is 2.16 to 2.28. It has to do with civil legal services. It sets aside $877,000 each year to improve the access of low-income clients to legal representation in family law matters. Once again, that's an amendment that's in every budget year. And finally, an amendment that we put in, the legislature put in 2 years ago, in the Board of Judicial Standards on page 3, lines 8 to 14, sets aside $125,000 each year for special investigative and hearing costs for major disciplinary actions undertaken by the board. This allows the board to pay costs, particularly investigative costs, as they occur, and they won't have to come back in a supplemental budget year with a request like they've had to in, I'd say, five of the last six off-budget years. And that is Article 1, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Backus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Article 2, then, beginning on page 3 of the division report. Mr. Turner went through these already, but I'll just point out where they are. Section 1 is the increase of the various court fees, including the filing fee. Sections 2 and 3 relate to the parking surcharge increase. Section 4 is the conciliation court filing fee increase. And Section 5 is the appellate filing fee increase. Section 6 requests the Supreme Court to assess a public defender fee on licensed attorneys that would be equal to the current civil legal services fee. And it would require the fee, if imposed, to be deposited into a special account and then appropriates money out of that account to the Board of Public Defense. Article 3, Section 1, Mr. Turner also alluded to this one. This is where the criminal and traffic offender surcharge is being extended to a person who completes a diversion program for a traffic-related offense. Section 2 authorizes a court to appoint a special master to preside over pretrial matters in certain cases, and this provision is being sunsetted on July 1, 2012. Section 3 strikes language identifying specific locations in Hennepin County for misdemeanor violations bureaus. Section 4 increases the maximum claim limit for conciliation court. Consumer credit claims are being increased from $4,000 to $7,500, and all other matters are being doubled from $7,500 to $15,000. Section 5 provides that referees can preside over conciliation courts throughout the state. Currently, that's only authorized in Ramsey and Hennepin counties. Section 6 provides for a restorative justice alternative disposition option in certain adult and juvenile offense cases. Section 7 prohibits local units of government from imposing administrative penalties to enforce state law violations having a felony, gross misdemeanor, or petty misdemeanor penalty. Section 8 amends the provision. Currently, we have mandatory minimum fines for controlled substance offenders, and 70% of those mandatory fines are supposed to go to the local drug abuse prevention programs. This section would expand that, so that money could also go to juvenile court drug intervention programs. And then Section 9 repeals an obsolete provision of law relating to the relocation of the municipal court in Bloomington. Article 4, then, was a judicial branch initiative. The courts came with this bill. It was designed to streamline and make more efficient the handling of citations and parking tickets that are processed by the courts and provide better enforcement and more efficient enforcement of judicial sanctions. Sections 1 and 2 relate, and of course they do other things as well. Sections 1 and 2 address retired justices who hear cases. Section 1 removes outdated language pertaining to the rate of pay for retired Supreme Court justices, and Section 2 clarifies that the Chief Justice shall determine the pay and expenses to be received by retired Supreme Court justices. Sections 3 and a few others in the article are related to the state takeover of the court system, which is now complete, and changes some of the laws that are related to that. Section 3 clarifies that all fines, forfeited bail money, et cetera, relating to water safety and watercraft violations must be deposited in the state treasury. Sections 4 and 5 provide that the law library fee will only be imposed once per case. Sections 6 through 12 provide unique statutory numbers for fifth-degree controlled substance offenses, possession and sale offenses, and then possession of meth precursor offenses and DWI offenses. There are no substantive changes being made here except for the mandatory minimum penalty currently applicable to fifth-degree controlled substance crimes is not being reenacted here because of the changes in Senator Higgins's bill from Friday. These changes are designed to basically allow the courts to know just based on the citation of an offense what the specific type of offense was and allow them to better distribute fine money. Sections 13 to 16, 18, 19, and 30 make conforming changes related to these changes we just talked about. Section 17 clarifies how the chemical use assessment charge and surcharge are to be distributed when the assessment's not conducted by the county of venue. Section 20 clarifies, this is another section related to the state takeover of the trial court system, clarifies that the fines and forfeited bail collected from persons apprehended or arrested by the state patrol will be deposited into the state treasury. Section 21 provides that the criminal and traffic offense surcharge is only applied once per case. Section 22 exempts the judicial branch from the provisions of Minnesota Statute Section 364, which relates to criminal offender rehabilitation. Section 23 strikes obsolete language in law requiring county boards to provide stationery, postage, envelopes, etc. to judges. That's also related to the state takeover. Section 24 provides clear authority for the judicial branch to establish uniform collection policies and procedures. Sections 25 and 26 relate to the disposition of fines and uniform distribution of money collected in Ramsey County and other counties except for Hennepin County. Section 27 and 29 permit judgment creditors' attorneys to order disclosure of assets for judgment enforcement in conciliation court and district court matters without having to apply for the court for an order. Section 28 eliminates the statutory requirement that original documents in probate proceedings be retained for 5 years. Section 31 and 34 repeals court authority to order imprisonment for nonpayment of fines and provides that fines and restitution are due on the date imposed unless the court provides otherwise. Section 32 repeals the judicial counsel's authority to promulgate the uniform fine schedule, which is what we call the payables list. That authority is being reenacted later in Section 36, and there's also a state funding change as well here. Section 33 establishes the authority for a court to refer unpaid fines to a collection process. A defendant is authorized to contest the referral if the defendant doesn't have the ability to pay. Section 35 provides that a conviction for a misdemeanor offense that's put on the payable list in Section 36, that is not enhanceable to a gross misdemeanor in the future. That's going to be considered a petty misdemeanor. Section 36 creates the new section of law that establishes the judicial counsel's authority to establish the uniform fine schedule or the payable list. The items on the list have to be submitted to the legislature each year and go into effect unless the legislature by law provides otherwise. Any misdemeanor placed on the payables list will be treated as a petty misdemeanor by the courts, except that if it's a third or subsequent offense that's charged by a formal complaint or if it's a traffic offense that endangers any person or property, then it won't be. Section 37 provides that court-ordered fines, restitution day fines, are due on the date imposed unless the court provides otherwise. Section 38 removes the ability of probation to request a hearing if an ordered fine hasn't been paid prior to probation expiring. Section 39 provides removes the ability for a court to extend probation if it finds that a fine hasn't been paid. And then Section 40 provides that disbursements of money collected for prosecution costs shall be paid to the subdivision of government that employed the prosecuting attorney or otherwise provided for prosecution of the case. And then Section 41 repeals statutory provisions that are superseded by the article.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Sarah Foley or Mr. Backus on what we have in front of us? Great, no questions. No questions or discussion. Any amendments? I know there's one. Sarah Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment, the A14 amendment.
Okay. Okay, if we could have it distributed.
And Mr. Chair, I think
I
need to make a small oral amendment to the amendment on line 1.3, delete B, where it says B equal to. I think you need to keep that B in there. So let me explain this, if I may. Mr. Chair, this is language that has been agreed to, I'm told, by the between legal aid and the public defenders. And under the language as written in the bill, this is the section that allows fees on attorney licenses for public defenders. And there's existing fees for legal services. And this just changes it because, I guess, under current law, the legal aid fee wouldn't go up if the public defender fee did. But the public defender fee would automatically go up if the legal aid fee did. And this amendment is an attempt to put them on the same. They'd be treated the same. So instead of saying the fee must be not less than, or not must be equal to, it would say not less than, and would reference the fees established already in 1997.
Sir Betzold.
Just a question, Mr. Chair. It says after the fee insert established by the Supreme Court in 1997, on line 7.27, the word fee appears twice. So after which fee is this established?
It have to be, Mr. Chair, I'm assuming fee. It has to be after the second fee. So that should be clarified.
Okay. So, Sir Betzold?
I just want to make sure that it's after the second fee.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir Olson?
Just a technical, your change of taking the B out doesn't work if you leave the second phrase as is. Did you take the B out of the second one, too? Because it's if you incorporate it, it just says the fee must not be less than. But you want to leave the first B in, so then you want it, should it be not less than? There's two ways of saying the same thing, so, but you can't have it both ways.
Mr. Chair, I'd like it to say, I believe, is if imposed, the fee must be not less than.
So take the B out of the other half of the. Out of both pieces of the amendment.
Okay. Senator Anderson?
I only see one B in the amendment, so what am I missing?
Page on 1.3, the inserted language includes a B. Okay. If you leave that in, you'll say B not B less than.
Civil service, legal services fee established by the Supreme Court in 1997.
It's just the beginning. She's saying if imposed, the fee must be not be less than. You don't need both.
All right, Senator Anderson, what?
Oh, I'm sorry. There is a B in this language. I think I probably just read it wrong. So I think I should just keep.
It's okay the way it is.
I think Mr. Watson was right.
Senator Olson?
As usual.
Mr. Backus.
Or Mr. Backus. I think it was Mr.
All right, so Senator Anderson, any changes you wish to make to the amendment?
No, it's okay.
No, except we probably should say after the second fee. Insert.
All right, Mr. Watson, what would you
suggest? We'll let Mr. Watson tell me.
Yes. Ms. Chairman, I think that's fine.
It's fine the way it is.
It is. Thank you for catching.
Okay. So Senator Anderson moves adoption of the A14 amendment. Is there further discussion? Senator Foley, did you?
I would accept that.
Okay. All right. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
I have a question relating to several places in the last article, a number of sections, but it's a more general question that relates to the phrase that You'll see on the bottom of page 21, that's one place, where it says these fines or surcharges may be referred for collection. And the question goes through my mind is, generally that means a collection agency, not necessarily the city or the county or the state, but may be referred for collection. Is there a definition of, I think most of them actually are collected by collection agencies. So how do we know that these collection agencies are reputable and operating under some kind of ethics that would be acceptable to both the public trust as well as the private trust? I think last winter or this past winter we had several incidences that came up where you had city contracting with a collection agency and they weren't exactly very reputable. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Sir Foley.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Sue DeSalle from the courts respond to that.
Ms. DeSalle.
My name is Sue DeSalle. I'm the State Court Administrator. Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, we currently are kind of piggybacking on existing executive branch language regarding the use of collection agencies, and this is what this bill provides for only. Gives clear language for the judiciary. We currently have a statewide contract with a private vendor, and we are, by contract, requiring that they comply with all applicable federal and state collection laws and regulations, including the Federal Fair Debt Collection Act and Minnesota Debt Collection Licensing Requirements. So I think that we have covered all of those concerns that you have in the contract that we have with them and under the statute that we're currently operating under, as well as what is provided in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, so we would have one vendor that would service all of the cities that would use a collection agency?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, this is only applies to the judicial branch and to the unpaid debt that is owed through failure to pay fines through the court system. So this is just applies to the court itself.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my question goes beyond that. My question goes to the collection agencies that municipalities use as well as any other public entity. I mean, the assumption that I'm working under is that even parking fines, local communities, cities use collection agencies to enforce that. And what is the assurance that communities have that collection agencies are reputable?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stumpf, we wouldn't have authority over that. That would have to be some other statutory language, but we wouldn't have authority over what cities and counties may be doing if they're handling administrative tickets. That would not be a judicial branch activity.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, I mean, we should check with the Commerce Department. I would assume that these collection agencies have to be registered with Commerce and are regulated by Commerce, but I don't know. I would assume so.
Thank you.
Okay. Further questions or amendments? Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question on page 19 about section 10. It's the driving while impaired crime of motorboat in operation. And if a fisherman drives their boat to the fishing hole for northerns on a big lake, and they have had nothing to drink on the way out to the fishing hole, and then they spend several hours or half a day fishing and drinking beer,
and in the course of that drinking beer while they're anchored, they go over the limit for DWI. The boat is not in motion. They're sitting there fishing. Would that bring them under this provision?
Mr. Chair and Senator Frederickson, no. This is current law that's being reenacted here in this case without any change. So motor boats are different than motor vehicles. Motor vehicles, you know, the consideration of being in control of it is much broader. In this case, a person who's anchored, it's not a problem at all, unless, of course, they then operated the motor boat later while impaired. Okay. So this does not make any changes to the current law there.
Sure, Mr. Bacchus. That's what I was wondering, because I knew that was the case of current law.
Okay, further questions? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment. I don't know the number of it, but I have it.
It's a large amendment. Large amendment. It's the A1.
The A1 amendment, I believe.
Party.
The cross. Okay, this is a complicated amendment, so I'm going to ask members to pay attention. I'm going to wait till it's distributed to everybody. Oh, A15 amendment. I'm sorry. I misstated that. Okay, Senator Higgins, if you want to start, I'm happy to jump in. But Senator Higgins?
Mr. Chair and members, if I could call your attention to the spreadsheet, starting on line 61, you'll see that there are a collection of fees and surcharges. And what this amendment would do is... rather than have them as we have it in this bill, it would give the Judicial Council the authority to impose these fees. And you can see that they are set out in the amendment on page 4, and I believe they match the spreadsheet list as well. Except for line 70 of the spreadsheet, I believe that stays in. That's the initiative by the court that would improve the collection efforts, and we definitely want to encourage them to improve their collection efforts, and they have a plan to do that, and they expect that would bring in $3.8 million in the biennium. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. And,
okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm sure there's something I've left out, but... I think that's it.
All right. Thank you, Senator Higgins. Let me offer some supplemental support to the Higgins Amendment. And Senator Foley, I know you and I have discussed this, and this is not your initiative. This is more Senator Higgins and myself. To those of you on the committee who are not committee chair, division chairman, in review of the bills, we are attempting to minimize the utilization of fees. And we've had a discussion with all of the division chairs about this. We'll find tomorrow. I'm not sure what Senator Anderson is doing with her bill in terms of changing the bill before it's presented to us. But there've been some discussion. There's been some discussion relative to her finance bill as well. In the case of the work that Senator Foley did, this happened fairly quickly, so there wasn't an opportunity to do this within Senator Foley's division, and that's why we're taking the step of doing it within the full committee. Obviously, we've had discussion within this committee and certainly extensively within Senator Foley's division, as well as, I'm sure, Senator Moy's policy committee, the Judiciary Committee, relative to what's going on with the courts. And the Supreme Court Administrator presented a plan relative to fees, And there was some discussion about accepting that, but then some further discussion that we should try to minimize the utilization of fees, but do what we've done elsewhere to allow implementation of fees, not dissimilar from what we're going to do, I think, with Senator Murphy's bill, possibly in terms of the metropolitan, the Metro Transit issue, where if there are appropriate other sources of revenue, we can take a look at that. But to make sure that the user of those fees or the entity implementing those fees has the responsibility. So if, in fact, the courts need these fees, if, in fact, the authority under Senator Higgins' amendment would be given to the Judicial Council to impose the fees, that would then leave Senator Foley's bill with two new sources of revenue. Senator Higgins made a reference because on the spreadsheet and in the language of the bill, you'll see this collection effort, not dissimilar from what we have seen in tax state departments over the years, going back when I was chairman, prior to when I was a chairman of state departments, Senator Betzel's chairmanship, where we've got the tax compliance piece from the Department of Revenue. This is on a parallel with that. We also had made the decision to send to this division a limited amount of dollars from the unspecified federal stimulus monies. And so there's an additional, I think, 5.616 million in the bill of the federal stimulus monies. So that is Senator Higgins. I mean, it's your amendment, but you're offering the amendment. This is something we've worked on. Senator Foley, I don't know if you wish to offer any comments about the amendment. I should also add that it obviously changes the appropriations within the bill. And maybe we should have distributed a supplemental spreadsheet before we vote on the amendment, which will show, because it'll show now more significant cuts, significantly more significant cuts to the judiciary. It doesn't change the line items for public defender, legal services, and the small agencies such as Board and Judicial Standards. But it obviously changes the appropriation amounts for the courts. And then, again, the Judicial Council, which is closer to this than we are, can make the decision whether or not it's advisable to implement the fees. And so I wanted to make sure before members vote on the amendment that they also had the opportunity to review a spreadsheet which would look significantly different than the spreadsheet that was prepared by Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chairman, so what you are doing here, you're leaving the current fee structure in place and the current fees, but then adding this section that kind of consolidates all of the previously recommended fee increases and giving it to the Judicial Council to raise them. So you haven't changed the amount or anything, just to – they will make the decision.
That's correct, Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chairman, and do you have any doubt that they would not just approve all of those?
Do I have any doubt? I'm not sure. Well, I'm not going to speak for the Judicial Council, and I'm not sure Ms. Dozell wants to speak for the Judicial Council. Would the expectation be that they would implement the fees? Yes. On the other hand, I can tell you as a practitioner in a small office, I'm not too crazy about some of these proposed fees. There's a fee, for instance, that calls for, and I've voiced this concern to Ms. Dozell, there's a fee. We implemented, maybe this is a little bit too much information, we implemented several years ago a fee for the filing of civil motions, which I was supportive of. I file lots of civil motions. But it required, you know, beyond the initial filing fee of a civil matter, motion practice requires a lot of additional work by the clerks, by the judges, the law clerks, and so on. So we had a civil motion filing fee of $55, which there were a lot of complaints about from practitioners, but I thought it was reasonable. What this adds is a fee of $1 a page for every civil filing.
So, Mr. Chairman, my point.
So I'm sorry, Senator Olson. So to answer your question, will they adopt this? I don't know. When lawyers throughout the state realize they're going to be requested to have $1 a page, I don't know that the Judicial Council doesn't get some input from the practicing bar.
So, Mr. Chairman, So this is really to kind of make us feel better that we aren't raising any fees, but we're setting the fees that the judicial, that somebody else can blame, that we can blame the judicial council for raising. Is that kind of what we accomplished with this?
I think she's right.
Well, Senator Olson, if you know, I'm not a psychologist, but if you feel better about it.
Mr. Chairman, you're the one that has been fussing about fees. So, I mean, rather than being straightforward, you feel better about putting it over to the judicial council to do it rather than the legislature biting the bullet and doing it if we feel they're necessary.
That's a good point, Sir Olson. I'd feel much, much better.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for helping me with that, Senator Barroso.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to find all the, when we were getting these things passed out to us, I was looking at some document in front of me here that said the Judicial Council may, without legislative action. I can't find that. Is that in the bill or in one of the amendments that we've handled here so many times? Without legislative action.
That's probably in the amendment, but I'd ask Mr. Watson.
I was trying to find it now that I've got it in hand. But
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Foley.
Mr. Baucus would like to address that issue.
Mr. Baucus?
Mr. Chair and Senator Barroso, I think there possibly are two things you might be referring to. One is in the amendment where the Judicial Council is given the authority to raise and impose these fees. There's a chance you might also be referring to in Section 36 of the Division Report. I can get you the exact citation later. But the courts are also given the authority to place misdemeanor offenses on a payables list, and that would be submitted to the legislature, but it doesn't have to be approved by the legislature. So you might be referring to that as well.
Was at the bottom of the page. That's all I could tell you is I was flipping through these, but it was at the bottom of the page that I saw it.
It's on page one of the amendment.
Is this one?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Barroso, it's throughout the amendment, but starting at 135, it says if the Judicial Council authorizes the charges and additional fees, and that language is repeated throughout the amendment, the A-15 amendment.
Isn't the same thing? It had that phrase in there. So.
Without Senator Berglund.
Legislative action.
Perhaps you can help me understand how, in the future, the legislature is going to know really how much money the courts has to operate with.
Well, Senator Berglund, I would expect, like anything else, where we have special revenue funds set up, we'll have that information as part of the budget process, and so we'll see. The account lines as we do with all the other account lines.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps we should make that clear here so that in the future when they collect this revenue, if they collect it, that they would report their earnings.
Okay, we're going to prepare some language to do that. Other questions?
Mr.
Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I want to speak against the amendment. As Senator Olson pointed out, it's an indirect way for us to raise the fees, even though the Judicial Council would do it. But we have to be realistic in acknowledging that they are going to have to do it if we're cutting their budget by the amount that's proposed. And so why don't we just be straightforward about it and do it the way it is currently in the bill and do it ourselves? I just think it's just the better way to do it.
Okay. Mr.
Chairman, to Senator Berglund's point, would they report just the amount that was raised by the increase or by the whole fee? Does the regular part of the fee that's in our statute, would that be acknowledged or recognized in state sources? But it's just the increase that the Judicial Council has would put into effect that they would have to account for?
Is that directed to Senator Berglund?
No, Senator Berglund raised the issue of the importance of tracking that money. And I'm saying, what are they track? What would they be tracking? Just the increase that they approved, or the base of the fee that's in statute?
Mr. Mossman.
Chair members, to Senator Berglund's question, I believe that the language on 2.1 and 2.2 of the amendment, I believe that you would know about it in the sense that the revenues, if so approved by the Judicial Council, would be credited by the Commissioner of Finance to the court account in the special revenue fund that's established. And so the revenues, if approved by the Judicial Council, would be tracked, obviously, in the state accounting system in the special revenue fund, and we'd be aware of what the revenue stream is.
Okay. Sir Berglund, is that... Okay, Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I just have a comment or two about this. I suppose there is some precedent for raising revenue this way. I'm thinking back to 1991 and Governor Carlson and the legislature and a half-cent increase in the sales tax. And we required the counties to vote on increasing the sales tax in their counties or it wouldn't go into effect. And I think everybody in the state knew that the counties were going to have to do that to balance the budget and to keep essential programs going. I think that if this at least is very, very parallel to that. I do have another concern, too, and that's the division of powers between the judicial and the legislative and the executive. Are we giving away some of our legislative authority to set the budgets for the courts and the legislature being the ones that raises the revenue to fund the courts by allowing a division of the courts to essentially raise revenue themselves, which is essentially a legislative function?
Senator Fredrickson, that's an interesting question. As you suggest, we have certainly given other parts of government authority. You mentioned 1991. We did the same thing in the transportation bill last year, where we gave the metropolitan counties the authority to raise the sales tax for transportation and transit purposes. So we certainly have done that. I'd have to think of other examples, but we certainly have done that many times in the past, similar to this effort. So I'm not sure that I'm trying to think of other. In fact, maybe I should ask Mr. Mossman if you have other examples off the top of your head. Otherwise, maybe we could at some point subsequent to this committee maybe see a list of where we've done that.
Mr. Chairman, could I just, thinking about what you just said, in the cases you referenced, those are entities created by the legislature. In this case, we're going across one of the branches of government in the Constitution.
Well, certainly also in this bill, we have something that we've done before, and that's the section relative to the attorney registration fee relative to the Board of Public Defense, because we've done that with the attorney registration fee in terms of civil legal services. So for those of us, and the Supreme Court, I think, has, and I don't know if Ms. Dizell wants to jump into this, but the Supreme Court has always, I think, taken the position that the registration of attorneys is within their purview. So, for instance, the administration of the bar exam, licensing of attorneys, other things that involve ethical concerns about attorneys, that's all been within the purview of the Supreme Court. But in this bill, and we've done it previously, we have directed an attorney registration fee. So to that extent, we've done that. We also did it not so much on a fiscal basis, but on a policy basis. Members who served, I'm not sure when we did this, Senator Randy Kelly had legislation that changed the order of argument in criminal trials so that the prosecution would have the last word. And Senator Kelly had legislation to do that. and we passed the legislation, and the Supreme Court came back to us and said, okay, we understand you want to do this. Let us prepare the rule. You know, we do the rules of civil and criminal procedure. So let us take this as a legislative directive and let us then prepare the rule. So it's not a fiscal issue, but it was certainly a policy issue involving the courts that historically, where we directed the courts as to what to do.
But Mr. Chairman, by this, by the history of that that you just shared with us, it would seem to me that the court recognized that there is a separation there, and they want it to be the ones that decided how their courts were going to operate, and not the legislature. So I'm not sure you're.
So this would be.
I'm not sure that example.
No,
supports your argument for doing what's before us here.
No, I would argue that it does, to the extent that in this instance, the courts came to us and said, don't direct us, and we're kind of putting it back, doing the reverse. So, but it seemed that this was, if we were going to try to minimize fees, but, and again, relative to what Senator Olson said, where there was discussion about the amount, you know, whether or not the court would implement this. You know, I think as this the possibility of these fees are understood, I'm not so sure that would be the case. So this allows the court to make the argument to, in effect, their constituency. Sir Berglin?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if the way we do it in my division is standard or not, but when we increase a fee, we recognize it in the special revenue account for that biennium. So when we raise a fee, it doesn't just show up as a blank in our bill in terms of the revenue that's going to be collected. We usually would show it then as an increase in that special revenue account.
Well, and I think in this instance we do have the account set up, so to that extent it parallels. Senator Betzel.
Well, just also to comment, Mr. Chairman, however we do it, in 2003 we dramatically raised the court fees but sent the money to the general fund. It would have been helpful to the courts if they would have been able to keep part of that money. So whether you do it by the court, you know, authorizing the court to raise the fees or us raising it and direct it to the general fund or a special fund, I think at some point we need to recognize that, you know, if these fees are being raised, it should be directed to the court activities, not just to the general fund. And I prefer that we did it in statute, but I want to make sure the courts get the money this time.
And that's a good point, that not dissimilar from, and Senator Murphy knows much better than we do, that the fights we had about MVEST, where we had the motor vehicle excise tax being put in the general fund for years, not utilized for the purposes for which it was originally established. So not dissimilar. Further discussions on Senator Higgins' A-15 amendment. If not, all those in favor, signify. Senator Paraso.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to have the court tell us what they think of the fee increase schedule. I don't think I – is there somebody here who could answer questions on it?
Sure. Ms. Dazzell, would you like to – so, Senator Paraso, your question is
– my question sort of is, what would this look like? How many fields of fees are we entering here, and what would that schedule look like compared to what was in what it precedes? Or what it succeeds.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, you're asking what the schedule would look like for
yes.
increased fees. I think if you look on the, I believe, if you look on the A-15 amendment on page 4, is that right, lines 415 through 433, lays out the suggested the increases, and I believe it just codifies there what was in the bill. Same yes. fee increases.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Stell. Does this cover the counties completely and all the courts, or is this just aimed at specific levels of the courts? The fee increases that are
Mr. Chairman
described
and
here.
And Senator, it covers all courts. There primarily these are the trial court fee increases. There is a fee increase for appellate, for the appellate filing fees. And then, of course, there is also the suggestion of the requesting the Supreme Court to increase the attorney registration fee. So it kind of covers the waterfront.
Mr. Chair, am I correct in assuming that this amendment has most of the fee increases in it and there weren't any in the bill? Or the
No, they were.
These are putting them into the bill? The amendment is putting them into the bill?
No.
What the amendment does is, in Sarah Foley's bill is in front of us right now, these fee increases are in the bill. This gives the authority to the Judicial Council. The basic difference is this gives the authority to the Judicial Council to implement those fees.
Not the legislature.
Right.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Mr. Mossman a question.
The amendment, see.
So is the language on page 2 where these fees must be credited by the Commissioner of Finance to the court account in the special revenue fund, is that the equivalent of an appropriation? I mean, we still have to appropriate the money or it can't be used, I think.
Mr. Mossman?
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, I believe the there is language elsewhere in the bill that makes the money available, and Mr. Bacchus is raising his hand. I think he can probably point to where it is. The last page of the amendment. Yes.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, that's correct. All of the money from these fees are going into the court account, which is created in Section 7 of the amendment, which is on pages 7 to 8. And all of the money being deposited into that account is then statutorily appropriated to the courts in the amendment.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, if I could add in reference to your earlier question comment, I think a distinction here is that typically if the fee was going to be imposed with certainty and go into the special revenue fund, here there's some uncertainty as to whether or not the fees would actually come to pass because they're being made contingent on the Judicial Council's approval, as opposed to being set in law.
Well,
Mr. Chairman?
Sir Ellison.
Mr. Chairman, so the only revenues that are going into the special fund are the increases, not the entire fees. The rest of the fees go into the general fund,
correct,
which is what was the basis for your adjustment of the appropriations.
That's
on page
correct.
1 of the amendment. So you're adjusting that down just to accommodate the increases, and then they would go into that special fund that they would have direct access to it.
That's correct, Senator Olson.
Senator
Berlin.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Mossman, then in the future, if they are approved by the Judicial Council, we would have a set amount of money that we would be approving to be appropriated.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglund, I think yes. If the fees were approved, they would be in the special revenue fund, and the language on page 8 would make them available. It would not, I don't think, prohibit a future legislature from altering the way the monies are appropriated or how they are actually what the disposition of them is. I mean, you could move them to a different fund. You could appropriate them differently. They would be state revenues.
Senator Foley? Did.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I want to indicate that the Supreme Court may be more interested in the fees that might arise out of the A-15 amendment because of they're already working on some initiatives that will streamline their operation and perhaps reduce the cost of that.
Yeah, which we don't do anymore.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, I don't know much about the Judicial Council and what kind of makeup it has and who appoints it.
Mr. Zell.
Mr. Chair and Senators, the Judicial Council was created in July of 2005 at the same time that full state funding of the trial courts occurred. It was done by Chief Justice Order, at the time Chief Justice Blatz. It's a 25-person body, 15 of whom are trial court judges. By office, all chief judges of the 10 judicial districts are members. The Chief Justice chairs it. The member of the Supreme Court is on that, too. The Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals and another Court of Appeals justice. In addition, there are six administrators who are non-voting members. I'm a member. The State Court Administrator is a member. We have three who are elected by from the trial court administrators themselves, one county court administrator, and another appointee who happens to be the deputy state court administrator right now. So there are 19 voting members. They meet monthly. They're by Chief Justice order. They are the single administrative policymaking body for the judicial branch.
Okay. Further questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Further discussions on the bill?
Mr. Chairman?
Senate file. Senator Stump.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just a question on Article 3, Section 7. And I'm just wondering if that's reflected on the spreadsheet, the impact of that. Where I might find it.
Can you tell us the page number, Mr. Chair?
It's on page 13. The new language is on page 13.18 to
13.22. Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, the change in the administrative actions is not reflected in the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chairman, do we have any idea what impact that has, or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, this has been discussed quite extensively for a number of years now. What we're basically working with is the court has determined that if we go with Senator Foley's recommendation to prohibit administrative fines, the court has said it's going to cost about $4 million and it's going to bring in about $4 million, so it's basically a wash. If we take it out, it'd be current law, current projections. So this provision, I believe, should be voted either up or down on its merits. The court has not projected a cost either way.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Olson.
Yeah. Why didn't you decide to do this? total prohibition down even to a petty misdemeanor.
Senator Foley?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why that's happened. It's a situation where why are we doing that? Well, one of the first shots on that is that two attorney generals and two auditors have indicated that the counties and the cities do not have the authority to process dollars. Minnesota statute 169.022 says as follows: the provisions of this chapter shall be applicable and uniform throughout this state and in all political subdivisions and municipalities therein, and no local authority shall enact or enforce any rule, regulation in the conflict with the provisions of this chapter unless expressly authorized herein. Local authorities may adopt traffic regulations that are not in conflict with the provisions of this chapter, providing that when any local ordinance, regulating traffic covers more than one subject for which the penalty is local ordinance shall be identical with the penalty provided for in this statute. So that's current law, regardless of what anyone tells you. And the actions here were to bring some compliance because there confusion as to who has the money, how the process goes, and all of this. And we've had, I carried the bill on three sessions, and the problem that that we have is that it's difficult to get proper action and solve this. So we're asking the legislature to enforce the law and take it from there.
Okay. Further discussion on we've got Senator Thomasoni to go. Further discussion on Senate File 1627. If not, Senator Foley moves that Senate File 1627 as amended be recommended to pass. Further discussion on that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Foley. Okay. And now one of our biannual favorites, Senator Thomasoni, with Senate File 2081.
The omnibus bill on hockey.
Yeah.
I think we let it.
They could secede.
Yeah, just go by.
Fix the card game. You know what?
Oh, thank you.
Why is it not really
wait.
We can give them like a statue of Ole or something. You know, like big
spanner Ole.
Yeah.
We have lots of them. Statewide tornado drill.
A statewide tornado drill?
I have alarms, but the rest of it can't.
Answer data.
Well, I'm not. No, I'm. You go ahead if you want to offer. I'm not going
to. Committee has before it Senate File
will not.
2081. Senator Thomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Senate File 2081 is the Omnibus Economic Development and Housing Budget Division bill. And members, we have what we've done in this bill is we've met our target of cuts and done it basically through agency administrative budgets. However, there's support in the bill for economic development and job growth, specifically in small business growth, Bio-Business Alliance, employment for disabled people, Office of Science Technology, jobs production. So it's a bill where we're trying to create jobs as well as fund these various agencies that work with our the people who have unemployment, workers' comp, and the rest of the agencies that are discussed in this bill. We do have some federal stimulus money that's available to offset some of the expenses in the Workforce Development Fund. There's national emergency grants for workers in the auto industry, like the Denny Hecker problem. There's also money in the Trade Adjustment Act, which should help employees whose jobs have been outsourced, such as Hutchinson Technology. And the spreadsheet shows the base for each of the agencies or program and shows each division item. With that, I don't know how much detail the committee wants to hear about this, but the spreadsheet's in front of you, and I'll let Dave Jensen begin and explain the spreadsheet and some of the provisions of the bill.
Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman and members, you should have a spreadsheet dated 4/17. Yeah. Let's start with Employment and Economic Development. You can see the governor's recommendations, the Senate, and then on the right two columns is what you'll find in the bill, which is the adjustments after the Senate recommendations. Go down the left-hand side, of course, is the line numbers and the various activities within business and community development was all the way down. We have some special items for like the Hugo tornado relief. And we reestablished some of the base cuts that the governor made, like on the Minnesota Inventors Congress on line 14. The governor had eliminated that program. The Senate restores it, but does take a 7% cut. That's kind of how the whole form works all the way through. We have general fund money and workforce development on line 36 and the various programs in there. Over on the next page is workforce development, but it comes from the workforce development fund. Page 3 has the Public Facilities Authority, Explore Minnesota Tourism, and starts with housing finance. Housing finance, the budget tails are the same as the governor's in the out years of fiscal year 12 and 13. Also have part of the Department of Commerce in this division. That's on page 5. You can see the market assurance on line 171 and the totals. And then we have some smaller boards and commissions at the bottom of page 5.
Oh, those are fine.
Page 6, you're getting into the Combative Sports Commission. That was renamed from the Boxing Board. Labor and Industry is on that page, along with Mediation Services. Page 7, line 270 is a Historical Society. You can see the Senate recommendations for reductions are quite a bit less than the governor's recommendations. In the Historical Society, they have two base items. One is their lease cost for maintaining the building, which is paid to the Department of Administration, their revolving loan fund. The other part is the debt service on the Historical Society is in their base budget. So we excluded those two items and then applied the 7% reduction. A new part of this division is on page 7, line 296, the public broadcasting. We haven't had that in this division for a number of years. So that goes on to page 8. Also on page 8 is the Arts Board. That is a 10% reduction, but we excluded the operations and services of the board office on line 322. You can see there's no reduction there, but the other two reductions equal 10% of the total. And on page 9, line 351, we restored the Humanities Commission funding. Starting on line 369, you can see some revenue items coming into the general fund, which helped balance the budget. On page 10, there's some non-general fund revenue changes. And on line 393, you can see that the $14,000 over the suggested target for the biennium.
Questions from the committee for Mr. Jensen?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if this is the appropriate time, but I know Mr. Jensen has an amendment that fixes some of the numbers and some technical changes. Maybe that's the best way to start out, as we'll get the bill in the form it should look like, at least so that members can look at it. Yeah, and I think we're distributing that now.
Senator Tomasoni moves the adoption of the A1 amendment. It's being circulated now. Senator Tomasoni, do you want to go through this, or do you want Mr. Jensen to...
If Mr. Chairman, members, I'll kind of group these by lines on the page, okay? So on the A1 amendment, page 1, you look at lines 2 through 5. That's language that just corrects the construction mitigation language that's in the bill. Lines 6 through 13 adjust some of the section totals and agency totals in the bill. It does not change the numbers on the spreadsheet. Lines 14 through 17, we found that there's two languages that are very similar in the bill. In page 47 was section 5, and page 67 it's section 25. So we're suggesting to delete section 25 and use the effective date on section 5 on page 47. Mr. Chairman, members, lines 18 and 19, the Department of Employee Relations has been merged into the Department of Finance, so we're just changing the title there. Line 20, we're deleting section 9, which creates an open appropriation in the general fund, and we want to use language on page 116, section 22, which also appropriates the money by the legislature.
Expired, yeah. Dead, they have to pay.
Mr. Chairman, on line 21, page 1 through page 2, line 10, are fees for the Barbers and Cosmetologists Board.
They've expired, yes.
Which match the amounts on the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, we're so desperate for fees that even after people expire, we still collect fees from them.
Expired, so do you still want the word it
says. The bottom of the amendment. Hey, Jen. She got it.
Expired cosmetologist.
I think Foley got it, too.
Does that mean that their license is expired or the person has expired? I think the former. The joke is the latter.
Good joke.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, the next fees that need to go into the bill start on page 2 of line 11. That continues to page 11, line 29. Those are basically licensing fees for plumbers, electricians in the Department of Labor and Industry. And we're changing from a 1-year license to, excuse me, from a 2-year license to a 1-year license.
Mr. Jensen, does that net out then to be an increase in fees or the fees level or what?
Mr. Chairman, it's an increase in fiscal year 10 and it's a slight decrease in fiscal year 11. But overall, it's an increase in the fees.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, are there any councils that we can shift this over to that will actually make the decision so it doesn't look like we're raising any fees?
Building trades.
She didn't really want me to answer that. That was in reference to the last bill.
Mr. Chairman, I see another thick amendment up here. I just didn't know if there was one coming.
No, Senator Olson, I was wondering if you were working on that or Senator Tomasoni was.
Mr. Chairman,
nobody?
No, that was not my issue.
Mr. Chairman, on page 11, starting with line 30, those are fees for the manufacturing home provisions, dealing with dealers and their locations and licensing. Let's go through page 14, line 13. And those fees are also on the spreadsheet and in the bill. Chairman, there, as you can see, we have three agencies with fees. One was the Department of Commerce. Other is the labor and industry, and then the board of barbers and cosmetologists.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
So, Senator Tomasoni, are the fees being raised to cover the cost of the of the regulation of the group.
Mr. Jensen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, yes, on barbers and cosmetologists are being raised, but those fees are raised, but they go into the general fund, and then we appropriate directly for whatever increase that they request.
So it's not, Mr. Chairman, it's not a special revenue fund?
Mr. Chairman, no, it is not. Same for the Department of Commerce. All of their licensing or changes go into the general fund, and we appropriate that directly. The labor and industry fees go into the code consolidation fund, which is, again, the licensing of plumbers and electricians and elevator repairmen, et cetera.
Mr. Mosman would like to add to the conversation.
Mr. Chair and Senator Pappas, just to be clear, these small agencies that you see, the other ones, the accountancy board, architects, and engineers, they're all supported by fees on their industry that come into the general fund. So it's paralleling that, and the barbers have an increased appropriation, increased fees to cover the increased appropriation.
Further discussion on the A1 amendment? Hearing no further discussion, Senator Tomasoni has moved adoption of the A1 amendment. All in favor of that motion indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chairman, does the committee want me to go through the whole bill or?
Senator Tomasoni, I think you should maybe quickly go through it and see if there are questions.
All right, go ahead. Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll beginning with Article 2. Articles 2 through 5 are actually the contents of the deed technical bill, which was Senator Bonoff's Senate File 1198. And deed went through that bill, and those are purely technical in nature. So I don't know if you want me to go through that in detail, because I would probably have to have someone from deed come up and go through the details. Article 6 is the minerals Iron Range Resources article, and that was a...
Mr. Chairman, I can explain that one. That one is strictly relating to the IRRRB, the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board, and there's two major parts. One is an early retirement provision, and then another one is a projects provision. The money is all appropriated from within the agency, and then there's several spots where we defined what a majority of the board means, and there's a couple other spots where we've moved some money from one account to another. So it's all within the agency. It has no general fund implications.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, in this era of longer life, do we need more early retirement kinds of things?
Senator
could
Thomas.
You explain that a bit?
Chair, Senator Olson, Thomas this is an option. It's not something that they need to do or have to do. It's an option if somebody wants to opt for it. There's several people working there that have over 30 years and would qualify under this particular option. So if they want to do it, they can. If they don't, they'll stick around. What we're thinking is that they may be able to retire and not be replaced, or could be replaced with a new hire that would cost less to the agency. So that's what we're thinking.
So, Mr. Chairman, it is an incentive to early retire.
Yes.
Well, continue.
Continuing on, Mr. Chair and members, starting in Article 7, this is the miscellaneous provisions article. Section 1 was part of the governor's bill, and this is for some license investigation done by the Department of Commerce. And then sections 2 through...
Ms. Doyle, what page are you on?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. We are on page 105.
Thank you.
Okay. There. Sections 2 through 6 are also part of the governor's bill, and these relate to insurance form filings. And we are on page 107. Section 7 is a provision regarding the petroleum tank release cleanup program. Yeah. And this comes from the PFA, a PFA provision. On page 109, section 8, this is language that is necessary for the PFA, the commissioner of PFA, to receive federal money in regard to the stimulus dollars. Chapter 3 actually is a chapter regarding receipt of federal program dollars. Section 9 is also another provision relating to the contaminated site cleanup and development grant account, and this was a PFA-requested provision in this bill. Section 10 is from Senator Saltzman's Senate File 1882. This was added in the division, and this is a project, a Minnesota Science and Technology Economic Development Project. Senator Tomasoni reminds me that Section 9 was deleted in the A1 amendment. Section 11 on page 111 is Senate Files 1932, the contents of that, and that is Senator Senjum's bill, which is a program accountability requirements, new coding. Section 12 is from Senator Tomasoni's Senate File 810. This is the public television provisions. That's Section 12, Section 13, Section 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18. Those are all from Senate File 810. And these just make a few sort of technical changes regarding when the public television, when they receive their monies, and some reporting and auditing changes. Section 19 of the bill is Senate File 1541, Senator Pogemiller's. This would set up a form and organization to help with development around the University of Minnesota, and then also require a report from that group. Section 20 on page 115 is Senator Torres Ray's. It's a part of Senator Torres Ray's Senate File 1513 regarding construction mitigation and construction impacts from road construction. And there will be another provision later on in this section. Section 22 is another provision from the PFA relating to contaminated site cleanup and development account, the receipt of appropriate money appropriated to deed. Section 23 was added in division by Senator Pariseau, and this increases the surcharge for lead batteries. That is Section 23, also Section 24 and 25 and 26 are from that amendment in division. Section 27 on page 117, this is a provision that allows credit for individuals that weren't able to qualify for experience credit for electrical work. Section 28 is Senator Bach's Senate File 1661, and this is a provision requiring registration for unlicensed contractors and subcontractors every 2 years. Section 29 is Senator Tomasoni's Senate File 1269. This is part of the Minnesota Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund payment into the trust fund. That Section 12 is also from Senate File 1269, Senator Tomasoni's bill. Section 31 on page 121 is Senator Cohen's Senate File 1115. This allows for partial forgiveness of the St. Paul River Center area arena loan. Senator Tomasoni reminds me to let everyone know that that will not go into effect until 2014. The next section, Section 32, on page 124, is another piece from Senator Torres Ray's Senate File 1513. This is a construction mitigation pilot program. In division, we limited the pilot program to 2 years, and for $100,000 was appropriated for up to 5 projects to be funded. Section 33 was deleted in the A1 amendment. Section 34 also relates to Senator Cohen's 1115. This is for, Mr. Chair, members.
Chairman, Mr. Jensen. About Section 33 being deleted. We changed the language in the A1 amendment. The first 4 lines provide for the appropriation.
Thank you.
Okay, continuing on, Mr. Chair and members, Section 34, as I mentioned, was part of Senator Cohen's St. Paul. This is to for the city of St. Paul to issue up to $440 million of general obligation or special revenue bonds for a project called the Pond. Section 35 is the repealers. The first, I don't know if you want me to go all the way through these. Part of these repealers relate to the insurance form and the form filing. Part of what the governor's bill, the first few sections of this article were relating to. There is an arts assistance repealer, and also there's a technical workers' compensation section. And then the final provision, Section 36, relates back to Senator Cohen's 1115, and this is the effective date for the partial loan forgiveness and for the other project in St. Paul for the bonds. And that is it for that article. Then there are the repealers in the back. Most of these are from the deed technical bill, so we could certainly have someone go through them. I don't know the particulars on all of these, but most of these relate, other than ones I just went through, relate to the deed technical bill.
I don't think you need to go through them. Members look at them and have questions. They can raise questions about them. Senator Tomasoni, this bill contains the appropriation for the State Arts Board.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how this correlates with the legacy amendment and when we might be seeing the bill.
Mr. Chairman, at this point in time, it has nothing to do with the legacy amendment. So it's just the general fund appropriation of the State Arts Board. We didn't deal with the legacy amendment at all. We will be having more meetings and deciding how to put together the legacy amendment in the next couple of weeks here.
Will that be a separate bill then?
It'll be a separate bill, Mr. Chairman. Yes.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, on that point, I'll be offering an amendment to take out the clean water legacy recommendations that Senator Tomasoni's committee has put together, and then we'll just put them into our clean water legacy recommendations in our division, along with the other parts of the legacy dollars on clean water.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson will be putting her legacy amendment bills together later also, and somewhere along the way we're going to probably marry them, but I'm not sure exactly how that's going to work just yet.
Thank you. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm puzzling over this proposal to forgive the loan that we gave St. Paul for the Xcel Energy Center and allow them to, sounds like, expand another and build another ice arena. And I'm just wondering why we would forgive the loan when we're so short of money ourselves at this point in time. And, you know, it was something that we negotiated in good faith back when the center was approved. And I do believe that we, you know, the taxpayers fully expected some of that money to be repaid. And I don't think much of it was yet. It sounds like the balance of it is still unpaid.
No, Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, let me try to help you out a little bit on this one. You know, Senator Roebling, someday you're going to like some of my amendments and so on. The other day, Senator Roebling said, I don't like this amendment either. And I forget what it was, but I guess you don't like this one either. So I'm going to ask for a little bit of help from Senator Pappas and Senator Anderson. In offering a fuller explanation of this. First of all, I object to your characterization, not yours, but to the extent this was negotiated in good faith. No, this wasn't negotiated in good faith to the extent that St. Paul really didn't have a choice 11 years ago in how this was set up. First, as to the dollars, and I might ask for a little bit of help from either the city or from Mr. Mossman. The forgiveness section is $32.750 million with interest about $34 million plus. I think what's been paid is about $17 million. I hope I'm in the ballpark on that. I'm sorry, 15.5. So I'm sorry, I was a little bit off. Here's the issue. Now, and keep in mind, I understand we're short money. This kicks in 2014, so it doesn't affect this next biennium or the out biennium. There are many, many cities in this state that have secured support for significant what are considered to be economic development projects. And, Senator Roebling, this isn't to put you on the spot, but whether you agree or disagree with the merits of whatever the proposal is, DIC, Minneapolis Convention Center, Bemidji.
Bring up Minneapolis first.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. DIC, Minneapolis. Is that better, Senator Higgins? Okay. And I've supported these efforts. The state portion has always been a grant. Now, there's been significant local participation. So, for instance, in that same session, 98, when Minneapolis secured support for the convention center, Minneapolis participated in the building of the convention center. And, Sir Higgins, correct me if I'm mistaken on this, by a huge amount. But the state part of it was a grant. Now, St. Paul, if we talk about the debt, because I think that was primarily state support.
Yes.
The state support for the DEC was a grant. I think there was some local support, which was more minimal. But without getting into what the percentage was, the state support for the DEC a couple of years ago was a grant. In the case of the St. Paul Hockey Arena, St. Paul participated locally in a significant way. We used our local option sales tax. I think there were some other revenues put into it, that was our participation. But uniquely, the state portion was not a grant. It was a loan with some part of forgiveness of that loan. And I don't think that's happened at any other time. Now, I will also tell you, and let me be honest, and we're sitting here with somebody who used to be a member of the St. Paul delegation, Senator Wieger, who got kicked out via reapportionment, has participated in these decisions as well. I will tell you that some of us, and I was one of the folks, who had some concern about St. Paul's ability, because we're not the size of Minneapolis, of St. Paul's ability to absorb the cost of the hockey arena. And I voiced some of that publicly in 1998. Not to the extent that I opposed their proposal, but I did have some concerns. If I had known at the front end of that session that the end of the day, and this was the end of the day when this happened, this was one of the last pieces of the session, that, in fact, I think Senator Berglund's not here, but she'll remember a conversation that she and Senator Langseth and I had with Senator Moe, which was a day or two days before the end of the session. It was about it was about the bonding bill, but in particular the hockey arena. If I had known that St. Paul was going to basically absorb an overwhelming majority of the cost of that hockey arena, I would have had second thoughts, because St. Paul, given the size of the town, was not going to be in a position to absorb that. So that's why this isn't meant to be distinguished from what's happened with other cities around the state, where the state portion has been a grant. The uniqueness of this is the state portion was not a grant.
Senator Roebling.
Well, Senator Cohen, but then I understand that if we forgive this, then is the city of St. Paul by itself going to build its new sheet of ice? Or are they getting part state funding for that, too? And if not, are you going to come back someday and say the city of St. Paul now has paid for its own sheet of ice again, and we need some help with it? I'm just wondering if this is going to perpetuate itself.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson.
No.
I'm sorry. Senator Roebling, I apologize. I was looking kind of over at the chair, and Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, let me make my position very, very clear. And like any other committee, this is taped. I don't know how much longer I last around this building. And I won't speak for my other colleagues from St. Paul in saying this. They can do what they want. I will not be part of any effort that comes back to this legislature to ask forgiveness for what's proposed in terms of this other sheet of ice or what's related to it. I will not author the legislation. I will not co-author the legislation. That's internal to the city of St. Paul, how they want to structure their TIF financing, their redirection of monies within the Planning and Economic Development Department. I'm not the mayor of St. Paul, nor do I serve on the city council. As a legislator, for whatever years I last, I am not going to come back here with a request for forgiveness or whatever else for this purpose. My purpose in authoring this legislation was apples and apples, that where there was a grant made for a major economic development project, in the case of St. Paul, it was not a grant.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question kind of went more to the cost of an ice arena. I think the Amateur Sports Commission was putting up, and Senator Metzen might be able to help us out, but I think they put up a quad rink out in Blaine for, I think it was around $12 million or less. They were putting up single rinks around the state for about $4 million. $4 million. And so I think if it's going to be a practice sheet or an ice community ice arena, $40 million seems to be quite a bit. I mean, the city of St. Paul can do what they want, but I was just putting these out as a kind of a comparison of what you can get for. Well, of course, the Mighty Ducks were very frugal in what they did.
Good idea.
Mr. Chair.
Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Chair, I'm going to say a little bit about this arena. Late yesterday, I was at the Civic Center and the Roy Wilkins Center.
More than a warming house.
And my grandkid daughters were all dancing. Dance to Fame, Hall of Fame, they call it. And it was packed with people from all over the state. Well, this is not just a St. Paul issue. This actually is a statewide issue. My grandsons play hockey. He got to play there, practice. And I'm telling you what, you give him $1 million, and he wouldn't have felt any prouder than to get to play on that arena where the Wilds play. We do all this, all kinds of do this. This is good for the state of Minnesota. I probably voted against it before in other years. But I think we got to face the fact we're one Minnesota. We're not parts of one Minnesota. So I think it's a great idea. Of course, I get a lot of pressure from my grandkids, so that's probably more pressure than I get from the legislative body. But hockey is really coming. Over the years, where I live down there, nobody played hockey. Now they do, and you know what the best teams are? Girls. Girls really follow when you get down in that southern part of Minnesota. So I think it's a good idea. We forgive a lot of things around here. Senator Cohen, you and I both know it. We do all kinds of things.
We forgive. I'm going to call on Senator Metzen and Senator Pappas.
This is more, the way I understand it, more than a hockey rink. It's called a warming house or something, and they're going to have shops there and many other amenities in this building. And plus the team, instead of leasing and renting somewhere else, they're going to practice at this arena. So you're right, Senator Stump. They're usually around $4 or $5 million, and this is up to $40 million. And I guess they wouldn't get that high, but it's more than just a rink, and they're going to take care of a lot of amateur events there too. So. It's going to be a real nice rink for $40 billion. But it is much more than just a practice sheet of ice. It's a building that will accommodate many retail shops, too.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In my mind, these are really two separate issues. One is the fairness of whether the city should have been stuck with a loan rather than a grant. It's a $170 million project. And the state is going to be forgiving about $30 million over an 8-year period. I mean, every other community in the state, when they've had a community center, a civic center, municipal center, an arena project, has come in and gotten, 50% from the state or more sometimes. So to me, it's just really a fairness issue that why does St. Paul, the host of the Republican National Convention, continue to not get support from the state for our arena. The other issue with the economic development project that's planned, Minnesota Event District, to me that's a whole different issue. That's something that St. Paul has a long-term plan for how they're going to develop the area across from the arena to provide jobs and, to provide more vitality to the city. And so I think they're just telling us that this money, this loan forgiveness, isn't going to go to just kind of supplement their regular budget. They're for, you know, cuts in LGA or whatever, they are going to be reinvesting in economic development activity in the city of St. Paul that will help the whole state.
Can smell a train ahead of it right now.
Further discussion? Senator Roebling.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I'm wondering, I know the Excel Center has been a wonderful asset for our state. I don't deny that. There's events there all the time. And, you know, because of how busy it is, I would think that the payments for those organizations using that facility, whether it's the Wild or the Republican National Party or whichever group, should help pay for those loan repayments. I'm just trying to figure out if that has not been the case, that the facility cannot generate enough money to pay that back. I would think it would be built into the rent structure and done that way.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, that's logical, but the economics of event centers is that it's a very competitive business, and so there are deep discounts that are given to groups for use of the facilities, and then the money is made in the economic development that's generated in the city, in hotels and restaurants and, you know, on-site services, but they don't make that much money from the actual rental of the facility.
Senator Wigger.
Chair, we don't have an amendment before us.
We do not.
I'd like to offer the A-20.
Senator Wigger has moved adoption of the A-20 amendment, and staff is distributing it. Why don't we wait a second before we discuss what it is so members have it? Senator Wigger, I see the amendment. Why don't you go ahead and explain what it is? It's pretty straightforward.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, it's one sentence. Ice hockey is adopted as the official sport of the state of Minnesota. And members, this passed the Senate twice last year in the education omnibus bill for reasons unrelated. It didn't quite make it. And if anything was germane to a bill, it would be this provision. Senator Olson has worked so hard on this. I did speak to the chief author of the omnibus bill, Senator Tomasoni. We've discussed it before, and I offer it for its inclusion.
Senator Wigger, if we adopt this, will this get us in trouble with the chairs of the Education Committee by having it in the Economic Development bill rather than the Education bill?
Mr. Chairman.
I'll yield to Senator Stumpf on that.
But Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson, Senator
Mr.
Olson.
Chairman, all we've been talking about is hockey since we get started on this bill. I thought Senator Cohen was just laying the groundwork for this amendment. So,
Mr. Chairman, if
Senator Cohen,
if this means I have to go to a hockey game, I want to oppose it.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, I have never had to go to a hockey game, and I have never yet been to a Wild game. But I still think that this isn't about the specific sport. It is about what is Minnesota. And a symbol of Minnesota, and I think you can't deny it. When people think of Minnesota, they think hockey. It doesn't mean that we don't like all the other sports, but that's it.
Senator Cohen,
and Mr. Chairman, I would agree with that. Certainly, hockey is Minnesota is more known for hockey than any other sport. In contrast to other states, whether
that's
it be members of Olympic teams or whatever. Or even stars in state high school hockey tournaments, Senator Metzen. But having said that, this is a little bit of a stretch for this bill.
No, it's not.
And I'm not sure, why can't we do – this would pass as a separate bill. I'll bet fairly – I'd vote for it as a separate – a freestanding bill. Is there a reason why why we can't do this as a freestanding bill someday? Or we're past the committee deadline. I mean, Sarah Olson, I mean, that.
Senator Wigger has offered the amendment.
Well, as Senator Wigger pointed out, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, you're the person who apparently has pushed this. Is there a reason why this has not been offered as a separate bill? I would bet it passed and be signed by the governor.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson,
I did not ask him to offer this amendment.
I'm not suggesting that, Senator Olson.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is a friendly amendment, and based on the discussion that we've been going through for the last half hour, Senator Vickerman said what a great sport hockey is and how girls' hockey has come to the forefront, and boy, I'll tell you that the River Center during the state hockey tournament, there's over 100,000 people that come to town during the state hockey tournament. It's easily the premier high school event in the country. And, boy, you know, we've got a state muffin, we've got a state apple, it's amazing all the state things. We have a state picture. This is obviously the state sport, and I would definitely agree that this should be adopted as the state sport.
But members, I think we pretty well understand what the amendment is. Senator Cole, and then I'm going to call Senator Berglund.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, just quickly, relative to what Senator Tomasoni said, I think all those proposals were separate bills. Mm-hmm. They were freestanding pieces of legislation.
Senator Berglund.
Well, and this amendment isn't going to change whatever economic activity there is in the state around hockey. So I don't think it belongs in this bill.
Draws
either.
Attention.
Senator Wigger has moved adoption of the A-20 amendment. Further discussion? Hearing no further discussion, we'll proceed to the vote. All those in favor of adopting the A-20 amendment indicate by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and the amendment's adopted. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A7 amendment.
Staff will distribute the A7 amendment, and Senator Anderson moves the amendment.
I have another one.
I don't know if you ever played the state. I'll ask it.
Chairman.
Senator Anderson.
This bill is the one I meant, or excuse me, this amendment deletes the clean water legacy dollars from this division bill and then, as I said before, all the clean water legacy dollars will be joined, merged together in my division's legacy bill, including Senator Vickerman's and Senator Tomasoni. So that's all this does. And I went through the numbers here, and it looks like the only thing that would remain in Section 4 on page 11 is the $93,000 for the Small Community Wastewater Treatment Program, and that would match up with the numbers that show up at the beginning of this section. And the remainder of the spending is Clean Water Legacy Recommendations.
Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, on page 12 there, line 11 through 15, that's in the agency base, starting with fiscal year 08 and 09. I wonder if we should maybe leave that in the agency base from the clean water fund.
Okay.
But the other numbers then would go to the other division.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would take that as a friendly, or just to incorporate that into the amendment to keep lines 12.11 to 12.15 in the inserted language.
So Senator Anderson has incorporated into the A7 amendment, retaining on page 12, lines 11 through 15.
No, it's 12.
Well, you're just.
Did you say 12.11 to 12.15?
Mr. Watson, can you help us with?
Mr. Chairman, we can't do it quite that way, because if there is $100,000 in the base from the general fund, it wasn't reflected in the numbers in the bill before. If you look at the bill, it had only $93,000 in it from the general fund.
Go ahead, David.
Mr. Jensen?
Maybe I missed the question, but the $100,000 is in the agency base. Was it part of the 07 appropriation language? So it shows in their budget base as $100,000 each year.
So it is from the Clean Water Fund?
From the Clean Water
Fund.
But if the point is to get the Clean Water Fund money out of this bill, then the Anderson Amendment is correct as written.
Yeah.
That's money that can be in Senator Anderson's bill to give them both the base and the new money.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it was the legacy clean water pipe.
The fund that existed pre-amendment is different from the fund that exists with the amendment dollar. So, but I thought it was called the Clean Water Fund, the new fund, not the old fund.
Mr. Chairman, I think the $100,000 is from the old fund. It's still in the base. The other items are from the new legacy money,
so
which would be transferred.
Mr. Mosman?
Ms. Chair and members, I guess a question to Mr. Jensen is, was it previously the Clean Water Fund or a special revenue fund? And I'm trying to look it up online, but I don't believe there was a Clean Water Fund in 07 in terms of the way we're using it here in the bill.
Mr. Mosman, we established a fund, I believe it was called the Clean Water Fund and the Clean Water Legacy. We never put money into that fund. Instead, when we were funding programs in the Clean Water Legacy Act, we appropriated directly from the general fund to the programs and did not put money into the Clean Water Fund. And that's different than the fund that was established with the constitutional amendment.
But we have spent money on clean water. So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, then maybe one should be careful about moving it over there and using Clean Water Legacy monies to supplant.
Mr. Chairman, let me make a suggestion. Let's do it the way Mr. Jensen is suggesting it, and if we figure out later on that it doesn't work, we can change it on the floor. That work?
Mr. Chair, I'm
Senator Anderson.
I'm comfortable with that because I agree with Senator Olson, and I think if it probably was just general fund base, so it's just really just a rider. It's not new spending, and so it should remain in your budget rather than come out of the legacy constitutional funds. Uh-oh, Mr. Watson's shaking his head.
Mr. Chairman, I think that we can't very well say that this $100,000 is from the general fund. That would cost the general fund. We'd have to say that this $100,000 is from the Clean Water Fund. But then we have a problem.
In the budget documents, it's established as a Clean Water Fund account 352. And that goes back to fiscal year 07.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, we were talking about clean water and doing things for it and putting money into it before the amendment was passed.
That's correct.
I mean, that was included in the amendment, recognizing that there was a longer-term need, but I know there was push to have started that before that.
Could I, as staff looks at working this out, are there other amendments?
Mr. Chairman, we could do my amendment if you wanted to.
Senator Anderson would be okay with you.
I will withdraw my
Senator
A7.
Anderson has withdrawn her A7 amendment. Senator Pappas.
I have the A6 amendment. Maybe you could pass out the fiscal note, too, after that. Doing it.
Okay, do we have the amendment? Cost and service. Okay.
Chairman?
Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, the A6 is the regulation of debt settlement companies, and it passed the Commerce and Judiciary Committee, but it got to Senator Tomasoni's committee too late to go into his omnibus bill, where since it has a fiscal note, it is appropriate. The section members want to look at is page 14 and 15, which is section 20, which is the registration fee. The registration fee for debt settler companies is the same as the registration fee for debt management companies. It's $1,000, the initial fee, with a renewal fee of $250. Mr. Chairman, just a brief summary about the bill. This requires all debt settlers to be registered with the Department of Commerce. It requires a written contract, requires a preliminary analysis by the company of whether this is suitable for the particular consumer, requires notice to the consumer whether the creditors are willing to participate, and prohibits false and misleading promises and abusive business practices. So it's modeled after our very successful debt management regulation.
Okay. Senator Tomasoni?
Mr. Chairman, I'm okay with this.
Okay, do we have further discussion on the A6 amendment?
Mr. Chairman,
Olson.
Will this have any impact on cutting down on all the telephone calls to call you whether you have any debt or not to settle this? And I think breaking our current laws that they cannot just have an automated call without a person there? Prior association is in the law, but if you haven't had any prior association with even the issue, they're still doing it. Will this put any restriction on that kind of
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I don't think that this does restrict solicitation, but it does require people to be registered, and it does prevent certain abusive business practices that are going on right now in this area where there's no regulation. I think we're one of the few states in the country that doesn't regulate this area at all. Mr. Chairman, there was someone who wanted to testify. Were you going to take any testimony?
Okay. I haven't been informed that there was.
It's not. It's someone in opposition, I think, or someone who has concerns.
Okay. Was there somebody who wanted to testify? Oh, Ms. Campo. Ms. Campbell.
Mr. Chairman, I do appreciate Senator Pappas recognizing that I want an opportunity to testify, and it is to concerns, it is not to opposition. I'm Marianne Campo, and I represent the U.S. Organization for Bankruptcy Alternatives. It is a trade organization of people that do debt settlement, which is quite different than debt consolidation. And I am speaking on their behalf because we have been working in a very collaborative manner on all the policy in this bill, and we have been trying to come to a conclusion of what would be appropriate fees to continue to offer this service to people who live in Minnesota for for-profit companies. For nonprofit is entirely different. For instance, Lutheran Social Services does many of these types of both, I don't know if they do debt settlement, but they certainly do debt consolidation. Debt settlement is when you have not been able to work out your debt consolidation, which means that you go with all your bills, and Lutheran Social Services puts you on regular payment plans. This service, which is debt settlement, is when you can't do that any longer, and you're forced to either bankruptcy or come to a debt settlement company to arrange your payment of your Visa, your MasterCard, whomever else you might owe. So we're the last step before bankruptcy. And we do understand that there are, because of the economy, it's a cottage growth industry, and that there are many disreputable people in it. We feel we are not. We would very much like to be regulated. We'd very much like to be able to stay in business. And at the current fee structure, and I believe Bill is here, one of the reasons is because of the positive fee structure that would go into the Commerce Department. we would not be able to operate under the fee structure that is still proposed in the bill. And we'd like to continue as a service available to Minnesotans.
Thank you. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Campo, what do you believe would be an appropriate fee structure that could allow it to function?
There are many different ways to structure it. There are percentages. Our company has numerous businesses that are part of it, and one is actually in Senator Metzen's district, so he has some fair familiarity with it, where they take an upfront fee. The initial upfront fee that was suggested to us was $50. We're a for-profit company. We can't operate a company on a $50 initial upfront fee. And the company in Senator Metzen's district operates on a upfront fee of approximately $400, and then they operate on a percentage of approximately 50% of what the client puts in an account for that account to be used to settle their debts. Over a 3 or 6 month period, if the client can afford $600 or $800 a month, we won't take a client that will not set up a savings account so that we can negotiate with Visa, MasterCard, et cetera. No. So there are numerous ways that can be done. And part of our negotiation with Lutheran Legal Aid and the Attorney General's office, their concern is the disreputable companies where money is received upfront and then services aren't given to people. So it really depends on how you structure it. We need to structure it. These are the people who are getting all the threatening phone calls, cannot pay their bills, and this is their last-ditch effort. So they're very high risk. An initial fee, an administrative fee for us of $400 is not a lot of money to start working with people. We have been working very hard with Ron Elwood and on a very collaborative basis, and as Senator Pappas knows, we have not opposed her bill because we would like to see regulation. But to say to you, Senator, what is appropriate? For instance, if you have a $20,000 debt and you came to us, we would say one of the ways we would operate would be to say you will never pay more than that $20,000, Senator Olson. We will negotiate with all the companies you do business with, and we will guarantee you will never pay more than that $20,000 at the end of 2 or 3 or 4 years when your payments are finished. It might cost us somewhere between $10,000 and $14,000 to pay off the people that you owe.
Senator Pavis.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Campo, I think you forgot that on page 21, line 31, we do allow a non-refundable origination fee of $500, up to $500.
I didn't forget that, Senator.
Yeah, mentioned 50. And people can still collect a monthly fee of $50. And then when the work is completed after 2 or 3 years, then the company would be allowed 10% of the savings that they got for the consumer. But this is a very tricky area because currently now there are companies that are not as reputable as the companies that Ms. Campbell represents who tell people, you know, don't pay your debts and don't talk to your creditors, and you can get into much more trouble and get much closer to bankruptcy. So we do want to make sure that consumers have all the information that they need to make a good decision about whether debt settlement is appropriate for them or not, or they might be better off with debt management.
So Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, when you see or hear about the large accumulations of that credit card debt, isn't a significant part of that the fact that they've been paying minimums and then there's a huge interest accumulation, or is it the actual corpus of the what they have charged or those accounts?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I don't really know. It would depend, I suppose, on the consumer on how much they were paying in interest. But there could be a lot of it that's interest.
Which is what can be negotiated.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Further discussion on the Senator Metzen?
How does this affect Everybody was told a couple of times to work this all out and come back with something that I guess I'm concerned, and I don't know all the answers, but there's an outfit, a company in Mendota Heights that hire, I think they have 80 to 100 employees that do some of this stuff. And he convinced me that they're on the up and up and do a good job and save a lot of money for a lot of people and negotiate these things out in a good fashion. How would he, if he was in this room, this Capitol, feel about this legislation? I know I don't have the specifics, but you know who I'm talking about.
He convinced me that of Mr. Chair and Senator Metzen, that's Al Leffler, mm-hmm. and I did refer to it previously. That he is one of the companies impacted. He supports the premises of the legislation and all the reforms that it brings to the industry. As it is currently structured, as Senator Pappas points out, even with the $500, $50 a month is not a fee that he feels that he could stay in business and be able to continue to give this service to. He would say right now, as it is currently structured, he would not be able to offer the service any longer in Minnesota. And he would say that he would hope that as the negotiations continue, and would have hoped by now the negotiations would have been so that we would be able to say that we could continue to offer the service with the fees that are currently listed, but we cannot. And that would be what he would say, Senator Metzen. And we're hoping that the logjam gets broken and that we will be able to continue to be in business and offer this service.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, he's convinced me. He's been in my office 2-3 times that he runs a good business and he employs 80, 90 people, and we don't want those people to lose their jobs. So I don't know if this amendment could survive or would it be all right if we remove that $50, or how does that work? I don't want to see him go under, and I tell you what, he spoke from his heart, and he's not a fly-by-nighter, and he does a lot of people a lot of good.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, the $50 they want, but it's $50 a month, and oftentimes these companies, they really don't do anything for 2 or 3 years. So they're getting $50 for not doing very much. At the end, once they deliver the service, at the end of the 2 or 3 year period when they tell people not to pay their debts, then they can take 10% of the savings. So if they saved the consumer $10,000, then they would get paid a fee of $1,000. I think that seems to me that should be adequate for, you know, making a few calls to some creditors.
Chairman, I disagree with that. They don't all say don't pay your debt. I mean, you know, I don't think that's...
Well, they're not supposed to with this law. They're not supposed to do that.
Further discussion on the A6 amendment. Senator Pappas has moved the amendment. If no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Further discussion on the bill.
Senator
Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I have the A8 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, while that's being passed out, can I just make
Senator
one?
Yes, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Thomasoni, I just wanted to commend you for putting some funds in there for the Humanities Commission. I think they did a tremendous job in cooperation with your IRRB and Twin Cities Television and that Iron Range program. That was just excellent that people are going to benefit from understanding and appreciating the history of the Iron Range.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
So thank you for doing that. And they do a lot more good things for education and others. So
I should point out, though, that the IRRB and the Humanities Commission were cooperating long before the governor's budget came out, so that it wasn't put in as a result of it. So
we all appreciate the explanation of the Iron Range to the rest of us. So. All right, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, the A8 amendment delete some sections that would take out the Commerce Department's very long-standing practice going back almost 40 years of doing prior review of insurance policies, of most types of insurance policies in our state. And maybe Mr. Watson can take a look. I believe we also need, and Ms. Doyle,
Senator,
to delete the repealer, I think. Mr. Chair, there's also a repealer related to this section on page 126, section 35. The bill repeals 68.315 subdivisions 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and I believe those should also be deleted.
Mr. Chairman, the amendment would be on the A8 amendment after line 3, insert page 126, line 7, delete 68.135 subdivisions 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, semicolon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would incorporate that. And basically, as I said, these laws have been on the books for since before 1970, and the majority of states do have prior review, and that means that if a new insurance policy is created or offered, that there's a period where the agency can review it and make sure there's no fraudulent language or technical problems or typos or any of those things. And otherwise, you leave it sort of for someone to challenge it in court or something like that. So it's a good regulatory system. I don't think there's any demonstrated problems with it. And as far as I know, this bill didn't go through policy committee. And so I don't think it should really be in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I have no problem with this amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Anderson's A8 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I have an A19 amendment.
Senator Thomason.
And Mr. Chairman, this is taking $12,000 from the base of the tourism appropriation and making sure it goes to the Upper Minnesota Film Board office, which is in Duluth. And I know it's being handed out now, but I've had a discussion with the tourism people, and they don't have any problem with it. I think it was maybe an oversight to not have given this money to the Upper Minnesota Film Office in the beginning. So,
this is the office in Duluth?
Yes, the office in Duluth.
Hey, messing with the beautiful hair.
Boy, that's not very much.
No, it's not.
I think we can handle it.
Okay.
That's just evil.
I think we've had a distributed. Senator Thomason, is there anything else you wish to say about it?
Nope. Aye.
Okay, questions from members? If not, Senator Thomason moves adoption of the A19 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further amendments? Senator Roebling.
Mr. Chair, I'm just looking for a clarification. I'm trying to understand some language here because the summary of the bill indicates one thing, but it's not clear in the language of the bill. On page 48.2, I'm trying to figure out what clause 2 is that we're eliminating, because on the summary, on page 10 of the summary, it says it removes the provision that severance, bonus, and sick payments, as specified, are applied to the period immediately following the last day of employment. And this is in the unemployment benefits section. And so is that what clause 2 was? And does that mean that if you are unemployed, if you get laid off, that even if you have a severance package, that you can immediately start collecting unemployment, which I don't believe has been our practice in the past?
Senator Thomason?
Mr. Nelson, I think this is the this is
deed technical bill.
It's part of the deed technical bill. And
Mr. Nelson will have that.
I don't know if Mr. Nelson wants to explain it or not, but I think it has something to do with the Ainsworth employees, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Mr. Nelson, are you going to help us out with this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, to your question, no, this does not mean that severance pay does not delay the onset. What this means is that we won't apply severance pay retroactively. I'll give you the example, and we've had the situation in northern Minnesota in a rather large plant where the individuals were laid off, but the employer didn't provide a severance package for about 6 months. And under the current law, it was applied back to the last day of employment. So the individuals were overpaid 6 months of unemployment benefits because we applied the severance retroactive back to the last day of employment. This amendment simply says we apply the severance pay to when they receive the severance pay going forward. So it will result in individuals not being overpaid benefits. They do not get to collect unemployment benefits while receiving a severance payment.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Sarah Higgins.
Would the effect of that be to encourage people not to pay their severance until out a ways, as you cited in that example?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Higgins, we've never seen that as a situation. But we have seen these situations, as I say, in northern Minnesota, where individuals were laid off. And then the employer decided, after they'd been collecting unemployment benefits for some period of time, to permanently close the plant, then provide the severance. And the individuals were overpaid large amounts of unemployment benefits. And what this is simply saying is when they receive the severance, they will delay the onset of unemployment until that severance is, in effect, used up.
Thank you.
Sarah Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if we've resolved that the Clean Water Legacy sections that need to be, that amendment that I withdrew.
Okay, are we finished with Mr. Nelson?
I'm sorry, I thought we were done.
Yeah. Okay. Sarah Roebling, are you?
Mr. Chair, as long as I understand that we are not starting unemployment benefits while severance pay and sick pay and all of those things are still being paid to a laid-off employee, I'm fine with that. And that's what I think I'm hearing here. But when I was reading the summary, it was not clear that that was the case. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Johnson. Sarah Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I wonder if I should reoffer the amendment on A7.
Let me find out.
For that? I don't know.
It appeared to be.
Yeah. Not quite, Sarah Anderson. Other amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I have the A3 amendment.
You just keep digging them out from under a pile or something?
Why do we have this many amendments here on bill?
Well, this is.
Mr. Chairman, the A3 amendment is just—it's adding some money to Senator Koch's bill on the film board, and trying to put a little bit more money into the Snowbait program so that we can get the production jobs in the state. Adjust the numbers appropriately.
Okay. Have the amendment distributed or further discussion?
Technical?
No. I don't think it's technical. It's in addition to the Snowbait bill. And move some money around.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Ferguson.
Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, having had a great deal of time to look at the amendment, but where is the money coming from to increase the appropriation for the Snowbait?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ferguson, this comes from the Workforce Development Fund. There is there's some...
Mumbling.
Speak up, Mr. Mumbler.
He mumbles when...
Request. It's effective, isn't it?
Pull your microphone closer.
Senator Thomas, there's a request.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, this comes from the Workforce Development Fund. And the reason for it is because There's significant evidence that we produce a real lot of jobs through the Snowbait program, and that getting people to work up front before they actually need workforce development fund money to when after they've lost their job is probably a really good way to do things. So we're working on from that. This increases the base to Senator Polk's bill.
Senator Olson, you indicated you saw the program on the range, and you'd understand Senator Thomas's presentation with help of that show and how he handles himself here. It's very effective. Further questions on...
I actually learned that from Senator Metzen, if you want to know the truth.
Vickerman's the champ.
Oh.
Vickerman's the champ.
Okay, we have the A3 amendment in front of us. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
And Mr. Chairman, I have an A2 amendment. And this is the same funding source. Senator Kubley had brought something up in committee that I told him we would try and deal with. And so this allows the Lutheran Social Services to have some money to increase their capacity for budget and debt counseling. Apparently, they have a real lot of people coming in now, especially during this time of people losing their jobs and being laid off. And so to not have these people available will be very, very difficult for them, because they are dealing with a real lot of people right now that need debt management planning and debt management services.
And this is also workforce development,
yes,
is that correct?
And this is the A2 amendment.
Okay, we have Senator Thomasoni's A2 amendment. Is it
Mr. Chairman?
Quite distributed, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, the first three lines are jacking up appropriations. Those aren't all to Lutheran Social Services, I presume. They must be something else. It's only $150,000 grant you're talking about, and that's come from, it shows an addition, but I don't see where the subtraction is.
There's no subtraction.
Line 1-4.
Okay.
1.4 has the. No, I'm sorry.
No, it's going up. Everything's going up there.
Everything's going up here.
Yeah, because it's an addition. It's an addition to the bill, and so it comes out of the workforce development fund. So, the 150 is extra.
It's from the transfer of the workforce development fund.
Right.
Okay.
But Mr. Chairman, I haven't looked to see what on page 2, line 6, you're upping. Several hundred thousand in each of those three lines. Is that anything to do with this, or is that another subject?
Go ahead, Dave.
Mr. Chairman,
the general
Senator
fund
Olson,
appropriation.
That's the same $150,000 increase from $42,632 to $42,782.
In each place?
It's 150. Those are just totals within the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Section and agency totals.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I think this is an excellent idea. It's really much more responsible for us to be helping people to manage their debt and pay it off rather than settle it. All right.
We have Senator Thomasoni's A2 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Further amendments. Senator Thomasoni?
I think Senator Anderson's is the only one that needs to be.
And can't we do it on the floor?
We could do it on the floor, Mr. Chairman, because I don't think this is controversial. It's just a matter of getting it right.
Mr. Chair, when will your bill be up? In a couple days?
I think it's either
tomorrow
or the next day.
All right, that's fine. I don't think that should be a problem. If there's still questions, we're not ready.
We have it.
I'm going to be this week. I don't know why you say that.
Mr. Chair and members, there is in Chapter 135 of the 2007 session an appropriation of $100,000 each year to the Public Facilities Authority as per Mr. Jensen's testimony. That appropriation at that time was from the general fund, and I'm not seeing anything in the Department of Finance's consolidated fund statement as being in the base for spending from the new clean water fund adopted that was set up for the constitutional monies. There is $100,000 that was put forward in 2007 for this PFA purpose, however. And so I think the question would be whether or not that money would you want to carry that base forward into the Clean Water Fund, or whether or not that appropriation needs to be funded to continue it from the general fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jensen.
To go back to Senator Fredrickson's point, the Clean Water Legacy Account was established in 2006 before that 07 appropriation. And then the name was changed to the Clean Water Fund by the constitutional amendment. So we have the account going back further with money in it. And you could take Senator Anderson's amendment the way it is and then transfer the money back to PFA when you do your other bill.
There you go.
Mr. Chairman, one thing we considered was the amount of federal surplus money going into the PFA. As you remember, there's more than $107 million going into that fund to help out with drinking water and clean water projects around the state. So they may need this additional $100,000 to hire someone.
I'm supporting your amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair, the only thing I don't quite get is if the general, if it's in the agency's general fund base and we don't need to appropriate it out of the Clean Water Legacy Funds, why not keep it there?
Yes, that's.
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, the only thing that's appropriated in this bill that you have before you for the PFA is the $93,000. So if you were to appropriate it from the general fund, it would make a difference in the bottom line amount of this bill would be out of balance by $200,000, basically, to continue that $100,000 a year from the general fund. So it would need to come from somewhere else in order to continue it or to increase the general fund appropriations in this bill if it were not going to come from the Clean Water Fund.
So Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mossman, the $93,000 is from what source? Is that general fund?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, that's correct. The $93,000 that's in the bill now and would remain in the bill under Senator Anderson's amendment is from the general fund.
So Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, if it's, it would almost be better to leave it there and not get in the way of what how you're allocating the legacy funds, so that you get into that supplant issue. Now, maybe whether this provision belongs in this bill or jurisdiction into the future may be another matter to settle.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Watson.
Just to explain, as long as we're talking about this, how it got to be the $93,000. I think Mr. Jensen's spreadsheet shows that it was that $100,000 a year from 2 years ago that Mr. Mossman is talking about that took a 7% cut. So that $100,000 from 2 years ago from the general fund to the PFA for the Small Community Wastewater Treatment Program then took the 7% cut, so that's 93, and that's what you see remaining in the amendment going to the agency.
Well,
and any other money that would be going to the agency would be from the Clean Water Fund.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
On page 12 of the bill, paragraphs E and F are the same thing?
Well, it looks
or
that way.
If they're just duplicating each other, that's what I heard you say, unless... I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you must have set this overall target for the Clean Water Legacy dollars from this area.
No, we didn't set a separate target for any particular article or appropriation.
Then can't we just delete it out of here?
Spreadsheet. Why are they not the same?
Mr. Chairman, well, there.
Mr. Jensen.
We just in the biennial budget system, which... trying to use. They are in separate accounts. As I mentioned before, it's a fund or an account 352 versus a 100 general fund account. And that shows in your base starting in probably 2006.
Well, Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
I'm just trying to understand why this is an issue. If it's the general fund and it's what you're doing now, if that bill is for the legacy monies, wouldn't it be better to keep them separate, or are you going to take over, say, for the Parks and Trails, all of the DNR monies for Parks and Trails and put it on top of it? I think that it's less confusing if you leave separate the general fund appropriations that have been, that are part of the thing now, when you are dealing with the legacy, the constitutional amendment funds.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I think now I've looked at it more carefully. Lines 1216 to 1220 do say specifically this appropriation, the $93,000, is from the general fund. So I do agree that that should stay in the bill, and the remaining appropriations should probably be transferred.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Thomasoni,
I think we should just do Senator Anderson's amendment as it was drafted, and if that's not correct, then we can fix it in the very near future. Okay.
Is that agreeable, Senator Anderson?
I think that's the right thing.
All right. And I think the session's already started upstairs. So Senator Anderson moves, I forget which number the amendment was. Was it A6?
A7.
The A7 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Further discussion or amendments? If not, Senator Thomasoni moves that Senate File 2081 as amended be recommended to pass. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank